York's Red FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench. Roy here with you until 7 p.m. tonight. Coming up on the show, we are going to recap all the day's action in the Premier League as well. Liverpool looking good now against West Ham. They're 2-0 up with 72 minutes played. And we'll get you an update on that one in just a little bit. Elsewhere, we're going to be talking to Roy Donovan about life in Australia. He scored his 50th A-League goal this week and then his 51st. A couple of days after becoming an Australian citizen, we're going to talk to him all about that. Going to talk to Jayce Kabia about life with Livingston. It's been a good week for him, scoring his first goal on Wednesday for the Scottish side. Going to talk rugby. Get ready for the Six Nations. Going to hear from Johnny Sexton and Andy Farrell. We're going to talk Camogie as well. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Oh, 0868104106 if you want to get in touch with us via text or WhatsApp. And it's straight to that London Stadium now as Liverpool lead West Ham by 2-0. Guy Swindles.
West Ham 0, Liverpool 2. Brilliant goal on the counter-attack from Liverpool. Played out from a West Ham corner, then Shaqiri into the middle, and then a delicious finish by Mo Salah, bringing it down on his right foot, dinking it over the keeper with his left. West Ham 0, Liverpool 2.
Yeah, it was a smashing goal, a wonderful counter-attack, a wonderful cross, a tremendous finish. That was a goal of the highest quality, and it looks like it's going to give Liverpool all 3 points. His first one wasn't bad either, it has to be said. So if things stay as they are, it'll be Liverpool back into the top four. They'll go third, a point behind second place Manchester United, four behind leaders Manchester City. Manchester City have played a game less. Elsewhere, Leeds had a good win today over Leicester. Derek Clark.
Full time, Leicester 1, Leeds 3. Marcelo Bielsa's men come from behind to record an impressive win here. Harvey Barnes fired the Foxes ahead on 12 minutes with a great solo goal. Stuart Dallas equalised 3 minutes later, finishing off a well-worked move. Both sides had goals chopped off in a pulsating first half. Patrick Bamford's expert finish on 70 minutes put Leeds ahead, while Jack Harrison put the icing on the cake on 84 minutes after the Whites hit Leicester on the break. It's finished Leicester 1, Leeds 3.
So first goal in four games for Patrick Bamford, and he was delighted and relieved to get back on the score sheet.
I'd love to say I don't think about it, but all strikers do, don't they? So as long as I keep putting myself in the position, to be honest, today it was more important to give a good performance from me, because last couple of games I've been a little bit off it.
Elsewhere at lunchtime today, Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel got his first win with a 2-0 win over Burnley. A good win for them as well.
Chelsea 2, Burnley 0. Azpilicueta's fierce left footer 5 minutes from the break gave Chelsea the lead. Hudson-Odoi crashed the right footer onto the post, and then 5 minutes from full time, Alonso made the game safe with a superb twisting left foot volley. In between the goals, Chelsea made and missed a succession of half chances, to the evident frustration of new manager Thomas Tuchel, but he will be delighted to be able to celebrate his first win, and a deserved one at that. Chelsea 2, Burnley 0.
There's one more game this evening, and that is at 7:15, and it is Brighton against Tottenham, and 15 minutes left to go. It's West Ham 0, Liverpool 2. Liverpool looking good for all 3 points there. Now, police are launching an investigation after Manchester United's Marcus Rashford became the latest high-profile footballer to be racially abused online. He was targeted after yesterday's Premier League match against Arsenal, while his teammates Axel Tuanzebe and Anthony Martial have also received hate comments this week. Abuse of West Brom midfielder Romain Sawyers led to a 49-year-old man being arrested yesterday. Former Ireland international Clinton Morrison said he's glad to see authorities responding immediately.
Enough's enough. You shouldn't be, because you're a professional footballer and you don't have a good game, that they start abusing the colour of your skin. No, tell me I'm a bad footballer and I'll accept it. Don't talk about the colour of my skin. I've been brought on this earth. I am a black person and I'm trying to do well.
Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta meanwhile reckons his team are in a good place to secure a top four finish this season. Their goalless draw against Manchester United yesterday extended their unbeaten run in the Premier League to 7 games. Arteta says after a difficult festive period, the side are getting back to their best.
The team is in a really good moment. I think we are moving in the right direction. All the players are so willing to contribute to the team, to contribute to the project that we have in place. When that's the case, I have to push them and make them believe that we can finish the season in a really strong way.
United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer meanwhile was happy enough with their performance yesterday.
You look at the games that we played: Arsenal, Chelsea, City, Liverpool. We defend well, we don't really concede too many chances. There's one foundation to play from. We need of course, to take our chances. And we know we've got players to do that. We just haven't done it.
Celtic boss Neil Lennon-Meanwell says he's scratching his head as to why his team are lacking a spark this season. The defending champions are 23 points off the top of the Scottish Premiership table as they lost at home to St Mirren yesterday. Lennon says there was a number of aspects missing from the performance yesterday.
We've got to show a lot more commitment, application, quality. You know, there's quality lacking today in the final third, and we've got quality players on the pitch. So, you know, we need far more, particularly, you know, when we are on top. We've lacked that. We had 18 attempts on goal, 4 on target. It's not good enough.
Just a little bit more in the Premier League. Leicester are still in third, missing a chance to go second. Their unbeaten run brought to an end today after that 3-1 defeat to Leeds. Manager Brendan Rodgers says missing the chance to go second doesn't make the result any more significant.
No, it just feels like a loss, like they all do. It's one where the beauty of us as a group, that when we fail or we lose a game, we try to learn from it and then look to win our next game.
Roy McIlroy, meanwhile, is just getting his final round of the Farmers Insurance Open in California underway. He's on 7 under par, the County Down natives, in a tie for 8th. He's just 3 shots off the pace that's shared by the Mexican Carlos Ortiz and the American Patrick Reed. Paulie Carrington finishing in a share of 6th place at the Omega Dubai Desert Classic on 9 under par today. This is his best finish in over 2 years. The Dubliner was 8 shots behind the winner, Paul Casey. Shane Lowry finished up 5 shots back on 4 under par. It's looking at the final day of the German Masters. That's taking place in Milton in Keynes this year, obviously enough due to coronavirus. World number one, the reigning champion Judd Trump leads his fellow Englishman Jack Lazowski 7-1 at the break. And there was racing at Nace this afternoon. The William Mullins trained at Bacchuson with Paul Townend on board has won the Limestone Lat Hurdle, going off at 11-8. Richard Blackmore got in the Henry de Bromhead trained at Clat de Rear to victory in the Nace race course at Business Club Novice Steeplechase, going off at odds of 11-4. We're going to kick off the show with football. It's been quite a week for Cork's Roy O'Donovan. The former Cork City striker scored his 50th A-League goal in Australia, scoring a Newcastle just 2-1 win over Wellington Phoenix last weekend. Later that week, he and his wife Ellen became Australian citizens, with Roy then scoring his first goal as an Aussie citizen on Friday, scoring a late penalty as the Jets drew 1-1 with Western Sydney Wanderers. I spoke to Roy yesterday about a big week for him.
Very good, Rory. Nice to be speaking to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on to the show. We'll start with the big news this week. Yourself, your wife, and your son becoming Australian citizens. Congratulations, first off. Incredible news, and it must be a massive honour for the three of you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Look, we're supremely honoured to have dual citizenship now as such. It gives us options to when football finishes, where we want to live and stuff. And, you know, since we came to Australia, it's felt like home. The people over here are terrific, very similar to Irish people, you know, the same values, the same sense of humour. So, you know, the sunshine is the only difference. You get regular.
And you haven't picked up an Australian accent anyway?
No, I haven't. I try my hardest not to, but, you know, I have a passport now, so I've got every excuse.
For us in Ireland, looking on at Australia from the outside, it's like a completely different world to what we're experiencing here. I mean, like, what's life been like with COVID in Australia?
Yeah, we're back to normal now. Apart from the first 6 weeks where there was, six to eight weeks, there was panic stations. But the best thing they did was they locked down the international borders, so there was no new cases of coronavirus coming in. And you know, as a country, they were very militant about dealing with the cases that were here, and it's been, you know, it's been perfect, really. As I said, after that initial period, we were back in pubs and back in restaurants and living life again, albeit a little bit of social distancing, but that probably suits a lot of people anyway.
Must be weird for you then, looking on at everything that's happening in Ireland, going like, this is so different to what I'm experiencing.
Yeah, look, actually, it's very frustrating to see, because, you know, I think with America and the UK not locking their borders, obviously we, as a small nation, I don't think we had many options than to keep ours open. But unfortunately, that means, you know, for a small country like ours, we're under a lot of duress, a lot of pressure when people get the coronavirus. And unfortunately, the numbers have been shocking. But as I said, I think the next 6 to 8 weeks back at home will tell a lot now with vaccinations and all that carry on. And hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel. People can get back to their normal life.
Fingers crossed. And normality for you is scoring goals for Newcastle Jets, which you've been doing quite a lot this week. Your 50th goal in Australia, an absolutely huge milestone, Roy.
Yeah, it was 50 goals in just over 100 games, and I scored my 51st last night as well. So, you know, very, very proud. to hit that milestone, but you know, I'm ambitious, I'm hungry, I want to try and get to 100 if I can. So we crack on. But look, I'm incredibly, you know, honored to be still playing at this level, and push my body and my mind to keep going, and you know, I'm enjoying it.
And your first goal as an Australian citizen as well last night, which must have been a special
Yeah, exactly. That's that put a line in the sand. 50 as an Irishman, 1 as an Australian. So the Irish side of me is still winning at the moment. So.
Yeah, exactly. You said after the game last night, you feel like you've turned a corner. Has it been a tough start to the season for you?
Yeah, it has been. I mean, we lost our coach, and we lost 5 international players out of our panel this year. So we're left with really a very, very young, inexperienced team. Besides myself and a couple of centre-halves, we're very young. Because the club is going through a bit of transition, ran out of money, similar to what's happening back at Cork City. But we got a takeover, but unfortunately it missed transfer deadline. So we have the squad that we have right now. So you know, we have a lot of young players getting their wings as such. Mm. But they're doing great. As I said, we've turned a corner the last couple of weeks. We've got a couple of really good results, and we're playing some good football. So the future is bright. We're only a handful of games into the season, but I have positive feelings about from this point on, you know.
So when you've got a young squad, are all the younger lads kind of looking to you for advice and kind of leadership in that dressing room?
Yeah, they're looking to me for advice, but I'm just telling them, look, just give me the ball. All I want to do is score a goal. So I'm not really helping their game too much, but it's great for myself. But you kind of become a little bit more of a mentor as you get older, and you try to pass on bits of advice. And, I try to pass on lots of advice to my strike partner at the moment. And tell him to do a lot of running for me, so I can have a lot more energy than he has in the game. But it's good to be, you know, to be in that position in the dressing room, because, you know, you feel like you want to pass on your values and what you've learned over your career. And I've been lucky enough to play with great players from Cork City days right through to now. So, I'm getting to pass on a little bit of advice.
Must be a strange situation, though, when you kind of look around the dressing room and kind of realise, oh, wait, I'm the old seasoned professional veteran here now. Like,
that's it. Like, I know, seems like only yesterday I was the youngest one, you know, so it's amazing how time flies. So, you know, as I said, I try not to, you know, think too much about age and birth cert, but it's hard to do that when lads in my team are 18 and 19 years old, you know. So I'm finally nearly twice their age.
Yeah, but I suppose that youth, I suppose, kind of keeps you honest, I guess, and kind of makes you work harder, I suppose, to keep replacing the team.
Absolutely. Look, first of all, you're trying to keep up. You're trying to keep up, whether it's, you know, sprint tests and training, or it's match day and it's whatever, trying to win games. You're trying to show you're still more than capable and front and centre. But again, it gives you a lot of energy playing with young players, and it kind of invigorates you that, you know, they're that drive, that hunger to make it and do something in their career. So it's I feed off that kind of stuff.
So when you look back, Roy, at your 50 goals, which ones kind of stand out as the best goals, or maybe not even the best goals, but the most important goals?
Yeah. Look, they're all special in their own way. I don't score too many outside the box. I would imagine out of 51, probably 48 of them were about 8 yards out, which suits me down to the ground. I think I scored a couple of good ones. I scored a hat trick for Brisbane Roar last year. I was only there for a short spell, but it was a big, you know, we were 3-0 down the game, and we were struggling, and we came back and won the game 4-3. I scored a hat-trick in that game. So that was a really, you know, a bright spot for me at Brisbane Roar. For Newcastle Jets, my debut was against my previous club here. My first club was called Central Coast Mariners. Mm. And I scored a hat-trick on my debut against them for Newcastle Jets. So I introduced myself to my new supporters against my old supporters. So it was lovely.
Actually, speaking of Brisbane Roar, what was it like working with Robbie Fowler?
Yeah, look, it was good. It was, you know, he's obviously, you know, iconic player, great player, and it's his first managerial gig. So, you know, it was different for him, I suppose, not being in the dressing room, not being part of it all. But it was a great experience. I thought he was a good guy. He used to, put on some good sessions. He used to join in the finishing training sometimes, and he still had an absolute wicked left foot, to be fair to him. But he was funny. He was a good guy, and I was, you know, very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with him before, obviously, he headed off to his managing in India now.
Are you keeping tabs on Cork City back at home, and kind of, I suppose, they had a tough season last year? But
Well, obviously, I mean, with Neil Fenner and Joe being at the helm last year, it was very difficult to kind of watch that. Obviously, you know, it looked like they ran out of money. I think they weren't able to recruit the kind of calibre of players they needed to compete at the top end of the Premier Division, and it looked like confidence wavered fairly quickly in the season, and they didn't have the experience or the quality to get going again, especially after COVID. So it was frustrating from a supporter point of view. But, you know, what happens now, it gives the younger players an opportunity to regroup and reset this year. And Colin Healy is probably a very wise appointment. He knows the DNA of the football club. He knows the culture there. But in the same breath, he knows the young players that are coming through. So I hope they can get back up at the first attempt and, you know, have a great season in the first division and come up full of confidence, because the League of Ireland needs Cork City in the top division.
It's around this time every year that the Roy O'Donovan is coming back to Cork City rumours start before the start of the season. Is it ever likely, do you think? Or, I mean, like, I suppose you're settling in Australia now. It's probably unlikely.
Look, I'd love to think that would still be an option at some stage. I would like to pull out a Cork City jersey again in front of a full tarnished cross. Obviously, that's always be a nice thought for me. But whether it will ever happen, we'll have to wait and see. But never say never.
I think it'd be fantastic to see you back in a city short, as unlikely as it is. Mayor, what's the target now for the rest of the season with the Jets?
To be honest with you, just continue the way we're playing, because we were unfortunate. The first few games this season, we lost by the odd goal, and it just came down to really inexperience and teams with, you know, really top class, you know, international players that have played in La Liga, the Premier League for their country, whatever, you know, hurting us, and we didn't really have an answer. But the last few games, as I said, we look like a team on the up. We're passing the ball really well. We're putting teams under the cosh, and look, we're getting results as well, which is the key thing in professional football. It's all about results. So I think if we can challenge the teams in around us and you know, be in around the mix in the middle of the table, because it's a kind of a playoff system over here, grand final system. So if we can be anywhere near the top six, I think we can do some damage.
And BT are showing the games over here quite early in the morning, obviously with the time difference, and we've been watching a lot of the games. The standard looks really, really good.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, there's a lot of top quality players come over here. There's obviously financially, as I've spoken to you before, Fox Sports, which is the equivalent to Sky Sports, they pay for everything with the salary cap, players, marquee players. And obviously every game is televised. So with that, you get five foreign players, which brings the standard up straight away. You get players, as I said, from La Liga, from the Premier League, people with, you know, 50, 60, 70 caps for their country coming to play in Australia. And it looks a good standard of football, but you've got to be very fit, because the heat here does play a massive part in the games. And to have a high tempo game for 90 minutes in 33 degree heat, it's I should know. I'm wearing factor 50 morning, noon, and even when I sleep, I'm wearing it.
It's not exactly going up to Bally Buffet on a Tuesday night kind of thing, like.
No, it's not. That's windburn over here. It's proper sunburn. So.
And Roy, I suppose looking a bit further down the line, is coaching something you'd like to get into once the playing side kind of comes to an end?
Yeah, I mean, I'm currently on my UEFA A licence, which is being run actually by another Cork man in Niall O'Regan. Coaching is something I enjoy doing. I like mentoring the young boys as a player right now. I like a bit of media stuff as well. I like talking about games and talking about formations and stuff like that. But really and truly, I'm still in playing mode. You know, I really have my game head on, and I want to play for as long as I can and at the best level I can. I'm not going to just be standing out there for the sake of it, making up the numbers. But physically I feel good. As you said, I'm scoring a few goals, so as long as I'm doing that, I'll keep myself in the window.
Excellent, Roy. Pleasure talking to you, buddy, and stay safe, and we'll chat to you soon.
You too, Rory. Take care, buddy.
Always good to chat to Roy Donovan on the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Hadn't spoken to him in a while. Thought that it was a good opportunity, yes, since he scored his 50th goal in the A-League. And, of course, being made an Australian citizen this week as well. So a huge week for him. So good to chat up, catch up with Roy. And good to hear he's doing well. And good to see him doing well as well. Great goal as well for his 50th goal. And a nice penalty as well on Friday. All right, it's nearly over at the London Stadium and there's been a couple of goals, but no real change.
West Ham 1, Liverpool 3. The Hammers get onto the score sheet. They'd had a succession of corners in the second half and finally an excellent delivery from Cresswell. It was missed by everybody in the Liverpool defence except for Craig Dawson up from the back, and he tucked home for his third goal of the season, the central defender. Too late, you feel, for West Ham, but some consolation. West Ham 1, Liverpool 3.
Yeah, there's time added on there. About a minute left to go. That'll see Liverpool up to third in the Premier League table, and West Ham's winning run coming to an end. We are going to talk Camogie now. Valerie has been speaking to Pamela Frizzell, the Camogie Association's Learning and Development Coordinator. They've launched PROG for 2021. It ran last year. Now this role is aimed at 15 to 21 year olds who have a specific interest in public relations and in particular social media. Last year they had 48 participants who completed the training and then were creating excellent posts and contributed by helping their PRO to produce posters, match reports, other resources, that kind of thing. Valerie caught up with Pamela Frizzell earlier on in the week.
Thank you very much.
Pamela, first of all, for people that don't know you and maybe don't know your role in the Camogie, can you tell us a bit about what you do there?
Yep, so my role is the Learning and Development Coordinator, and my job would be to provide training for all the volunteers that are associated with Camogie. I also work along with the GEA and LGFA to provide officer training and things like that. So anything that involves training of all our volunteers, yep, you can contact me.
Brilliant. You're an important woman, so within the organisation, Pamela, you're the woman to go to if we need to upskill.
That's it.
Pamela, we're here to talk about, though, last July in 2020, you launched a new initiative, the PROG, which was probably aimed at supporting club and county PROs. Can you tell us a bit how that went last year for you as well and where you come up with the idea to launch this?
Okay, so the idea of this programme is to introduce young PROs into Camogie clubs and counties. The role of the PRO is ever increasing and it's really difficult for one person to cover all the bases. It's especially difficult with the ever-changing face of social media, so trying to keep Camogie up to date and relevant and appealing for everyone, while also keeping up to date with the teams and matches and training, means that it's really overwhelming for one person to try to cope with that volume of work. So the PRO role has been brought in to encourage young people to get involved and learn the skills of public relations and hopefully be our future PROs. The advantage that young people have is they've actually grown up with social media and find it easy to keep their feeds really fresh, original and innovative. And we as an association want to encourage young people to use their skills to promote our sport.
Brilliant. And it's such an amazing initiative, to be honest, because if I know, if I was that age, I'm a bit older now at this stage to be applying for PRO. But if I was that age, I think I'd jump at the chance to be involved in sport and to be tweeting about Camogie. I mean, it sounds like the dream role, to be honest, Pamela.
Yeah. And so what we're looking for is anyone between the ages of 15 and 21 who are interested in promoting Camogie within your club or your county. You don't have to have played the sport or still play the sport. And that's important. So people who maybe just want to be involved in the background or involved in PR side of sport. And we're particularly interested in people who like posting on popular platforms like Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, so last year you had 48 participants who completed the training and probably created some amazing content out there on their social media platforms within their clubs.
Yep, they were absolutely amazing. I have to say we were totally blown away by it. We had 40 that completed it, around 40 that completed it, and the PRO learned from their own county and club PROs, plus their PROs actually learned from them. So it will work both ways, which is really useful. We provide them with training. So we gave them training on social media, how to use social media effectively, writing match reports, using some different graphic design software and much more. We then gave them tasks and challenges and asked them then to keep up to date on their social media accounts. And as a success from last year, we actually have several of our PROs who became county PROs this year and even one that became a provincial PRO. So it was a big success.
Well, that's amazing to hear. I mean, already they're only in the job a couple of months and now they've been promoted to being PRO of the county. I mean, that's great to see. And it's so nice to get people still involved with Camogie, as you said, even if they don't play and they just love the sport. You don't have to play to get involved.
Well, that's it. I mean, and there's plenty of people who maybe, you know, have decided after time that they weren't maybe good enough or didn't enjoy the training aspect of it. Or maybe just, you know, for inclusion purposes, maybe, you know, it's just anybody in the community can get involved in this. And it doesn't have to be girls as well. Boys can get involved too, anybody that's interested.
Brilliant. So what would the role of the PRO be if they were to apply to this?
So the role is that they attend training sessions, and it is now going to be an official role within the Camogie Association. So they attend all the training sessions and then they get their tasks and they just simply post and keep up to date with the club or county, Camogie Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages, and just make sure that you're promoting Camogie in a very positive light.
If they are interested, where can people go, Pamela? Where do they go if there's anyone listening out there now in Cork today?
Okay, so there is an expression of interest form that needs to be submitted online. Now, the deadline is coming up. It's as long as the forms are in before Monday the 1st. So you need to move quickly if you'd like to get involved. And all the further information and contact details are found on our website, which is camogie.ie.
Perfect. And I will share on our social media channels right now. You have a little Become a PRO poster. So I'm going to put that up there and everyone can find the details there. Is that okay, Pamela?
That's great. Thank you. And my email address and all is on that as well. So if you need any further information, please don't hesitate to contact me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us on the Big Red Bench this week. It's been absolutely amazing, and congrats and well done on having such a successful initiative within the Camogie.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's Pamela Frizzell there of the Camogie Association talking about PRO. You can get more details on the Camogie Association's Twitter. It's full time at the London Stadium. It's finished. West Ham 1 at Liverpool 3. Mohamed Salah with two cracking goals for the Reds. He's right back in form. There's Jorginho Wijnaldum with Liverpool's third. Craig Dawson with a consolation goal for the Irons. That result sees Liverpool up to third and a point behind second place Manchester United, and four behind the leaders Manchester City. So it's the title race going to be very, very interesting as things progress. Brighton and Tottenham is the late kickoff. That is at 7:15 this evening. Going to take a quick break when we come back. Going to be looking ahead to the start of the Six Nations. Going to hear from Johnny Sexton and Andy Farrell. Next, we'll talk to Jace Kabia about life at Livingston.
Miss the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Very glad you tune into the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening right here on Cork's Red FM here until 7 p.m. And we are followed by the fantastic Green and Red, 3 hours of the best Irish music coming your way between 7 and 10 right here on Red FM. Full-time report from the London Stadium, where Liverpool have beaten West Ham by 3-1 in the Premier League. Guy Swindles was there.
West Ham 1, Liverpool 3. For the second time in less than 72 hours, Liverpool have come to London and won 3-1. This was pretty comfortable. First half, pretty cagey. Second half, suddenly Mo Salah sprung to life. Two goals, both brilliantly taken, and they were home and dry. There was time for an even better third from Wijnaldum. West Ham got something back through Dawson from a corner, but it finishes West Ham 1, Liverpool 3.
One last game in the Premier League tonight. That's Brighton and Tottenham, 7:15, and the final Premier League game of the day at the Amex. Richard Newman.
Gareth Bale is the Tottenham player who gets the nod to replace the injured Harry Kane for this trip to Brighton. It's his first Premier League start since the win over West Brom in early November. He's one of four changes for Spurs. Serge Aurier is possibly on the naughty step after reportedly storming out at half-time during the defeat to Liverpool, so he's out. In comes Toby Alderweireld, Davinson Sanchez and Moussa Sissoko, Eric Dier and Matt Doherty, the other players to drop out. Brighton are unchanged from the goalless draw with Fulham, but winger Jose Izquierdo is back in a matchday squad for the first time since April 2019 after serious injuries. He's on the bench. Brighton against Tottenham. It's a 7:15 kickoff.
It's actually interesting hearing Roy Keane yesterday talking about Manchester United. He said his former side were frightened by the challenge of winning the Premier League. It's been a rough week for them, beaten by Sheffield United earlier on the week by 2-1. The bottom of the table side picking up a famous victory for them. Up until that point, they were the worst team in Premier League history after 19 games, just 5 points. So they're now 3 points adrift of the table toppers, Manchester City, after yesterday's draw with Arsenal. And Keane simply says, United are bottling the big moments.
They've got to the top and all of a sudden people are saying, can you win the league? Can you compete with Man City? And it looks as if the players have all got a bit almost frightened of the challenge, as if going, well, I don't think we're ready for that. Ollie keeps talking about these players saying they're winners. You go, well, come on then, grab it, go for it.
Now, it's been quite a week for former co-Ramblers winger Corkman as well, Jayce Kabea. He signed for Livingston, made his debut last week. He was on the bench for the League Cup and this week scored his first goal for the club against Kilmarnock on Wednesday. Now, I caught up with him and we chatted about leaving Shelburne, adapting to life in the Scottish Premiership, the professional advice he's gotten from his dad, former footballer, Cork City legend Jayson Kabea, the upcoming League Cup final against St Johnstone, and his dream of playing for Ireland alongside his buddy Adam Ida. This interview as well, just a note, was recorded before the game at Kilmarnock. It was recorded earlier on the week, but this is my chat with Jayce Kabea. Alright Jayce, thanks very much for talking to us on the Big Red Bench. First off, boy,
no worries, anytime.
Tell us how the move to Livingston came about.
Yeah, obviously I was just playing with Shelburne and that, and I impressed a few people obviously there, and you know, people talk and the word got across to Livingston, and you know, my agent as well is Jackie McNamara, he's from Scotland, so you know, they're in contact with him, asked them if I could come over for a week in the middle of December. So I went over for a week and you know, they were delighted with how I'd done and they wanted to sign me. But you know, I went to Ipswich as well and stuff, but I just felt like this was the club for me. When I first came here, I just knew, like, the dressing room was brilliant, like the manager, you know, he's doing a brilliant job here, and you know, he's just trying to make me a better player. So you know, it was a no brainer for me really in the end.
Was it a tough decision to leave Shelburne, though, because you'd done fairly well there since you left Cork Ramblers?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't easy leaving Shelburne at all. You know, I was staying with one of the board members, Stephen Mulhern, and his wife Donna, and their two children as well. And you know, they became like a family to me. So it was hard even leaving them. Never mind leaving Shelburne.
Mm. And obviously, like, you were with Co-Ramblers before that, and Steve Henderson was your manager there. He was involved with Shelburne behind the scenes of the academy and stuff. So he must have been a big help to you throughout the whole Shelburne run, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. You'd always see his face around the training ground every day. But, no, yeah, Hendo was constantly on to me, you know, just checking on me, making sure I was fine. Just like most people at the club, like, the way I was treated at Shelburne, you know, I'm ever so grateful for what that club has done for me. You know, it's helped me leaps and bounds. And, you know, the way, as I said, the way they treated me was just second to none. So I was, you know, I wasn't obviously happy leaving, but I felt that it was the next step I needed for my career. So that's where I went.
It's going to be a very competitive First Division next year, is it, with Shelburne down there, Cork City, Galway United, Cove Ramblers. It's going to be a cracking First Division next year.
Oh, stop. I think it's going to be the best First Division season that they had. Yeah, I know last year was tight, but with this season, like, you know, Galway, Cork City, Shells, the likes of Bray, Cove, pushing on City, you know, it's just everyone seems to, like, everyone has a chance this season, I think. Even at loan and teams like that, they're all building some strong teams. So, I could not predict anyone to go, who's going to go up in that league.
Yeah, it's going to be some First Division next year. Obviously, your dad, former Cork City and co-Rambler striker himself, obviously, is he a man you turn to advice, and has he been helping you to kind of plot your career, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, my dad's obviously had a decent career. You know, he's played at a decent level, and, you know, he knows his stuff. My uncle's, just all my family, because I come from quite a sporting family. So, you know, like, he just, you know, it was kind of, we spoke with my agent and, you know, me and my dad, and we all kind of agreed that, you know, we think this was the next step needed for my career. So that's what brought me here.
How have you found the step up, I suppose, from the Premier Division of the League of Ireland to the Scottish Premiership? Because on paper it seems like quite a big leap.
Yeah, it has, you know, it has been a big step up, but I felt like I've settled into it nicely. You know, like, everything is a lot sharper, a lot quicker, you know, more physically demanding. But I felt like, to be fair, settling well, so, you know, I feel up to the task. But, you know, just need to keep training hard, get my head down and keep improving and see where that takes me.
Mm. And obviously when you went over there for that week before Christmas, you got a good feeling for the club. What's it been like in the dressing room? The lads been quite welcoming, and has it been a good dressing room to go into?
Oh yeah, every single one of them has been so welcoming for me. Like, you know, that dressing room that I'm in at the minute is one of the best dressing rooms that I've been in. You know, just going into training, you know, smiles all around, you know, everyone laughing and joking, and, you know, like, it's just, you just can't top when dressing rooms like that, because, you know, obviously the form we've been in, we're 11 unbeaten, so it's just an unbelievable record. So, you know, we're all happy and, you know, no complaining any at the minute.
As you say, 11 unbeaten, fifth in the league at the moment. Obviously, a tough team, I suppose, to break into, given how well they're going at the moment. But I suppose that's the challenge for you.
Yeah, no, exactly as you said there. Like, with the run the boys have been on, like, it's just like, am I ever going to get a look in here? But, you know, fortunately enough, you know, the managers gave me the opportunity to make my debut against Celtic, you know, which I'm, you know, so fortunate to have had that opportunity. And, like, couldn't, being an Irish kid, like, you know, you couldn't, like, make it up, like, to be making your debut against any other team. So, like, just to have that opportunity was ridiculous. And from there, then to be on the bench in semi-final of, you know, Betfred Cup, Scottish Betfred Cup, you know, in Hampden Park, like, you just can't make it up. It's been a bit surreal for me, like, lately, but, you know, yeah, I'm loving it.
That's some way to make your debut against Celtic. Were you a Celtic fan growing up as a kid?
Do you know what? I wasn't even, like, you know, I didn't really support, like, Scottish football, you know. I just, Arsenal was my team, so I supported Arsenal, and, you know, I just liked watching the Old Firm derbies and, you know, just watching Scottish games of football. But I didn't have, like, you know, preferred team, but, you know, it's still incredible, like, the biggest club in Scotland, and to be making my debut against them, you know, they won the league the last 10 years in a row. So it's amazing to be out on the pitch surrounded by such players of that caliber,
and a great result as well, that 2-2 draw. But all the headlines, especially here in Cork and Ireland the next day, was your altercation with Scott Brown, shall we say, that resulted in him getting sent off. Can you talk us through what happened?
Just basically, he had the ball and I just went to press him. And he's kind of going toward, like, away, like, he's going across the pitch, and Callum McGregor's come the other way and he's taking the ball off him. And obviously, I've switched my run to go to Callum McGregor, and he's kind of turned and he's just swung his elbow at me, and, you know, he caught me in the nose. So it's a nice little one. But yeah, rightly so, he got his marching orders anyway.
Yeah, did he apologise to you afterwards, or did you even see him afterwards?
I didn't see him, to be honest.
Yeah, it was kind of a
probably better off.
Bit of a welcome to Scottish football kid kind of one, was in.
That's exactly, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, but it looked sore enough, was it sore?
It's just one of them, like, the adrenaline takes you through it, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And even looking at the conditions, Jays, I mean, like, you were playing on a pitch that was covered in snow, which is a massive change, I suppose, to what you're used to. Was that kind of hard to adjust to that Scottish weather, that Scottish climate, and playing on snow-covered pitches and all that?
Do you know what? Since I got here, I'm not joking, 90% of the time it snowed. Like, you know, there's days where we've gone into training and we've had to postpone training for an hour or two. Yeah. To get the contractors in to clear the pitches and stuff. So, like, you know, it's, you know, Ireland's not the warmest place either, so it wasn't the hardest, you know, coming from Portugal or something and trying to adjust, but you know, it's all right, you know, I'm enjoying it and can't complain about anything right now, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and come here, the League Cup semi-final yesterday, getting to be in a squad at Hampden must have been a massive thrill.
Oh, it's incredible, just like, you know, just jogging out onto that pitch, you know, and just like just soaking in the surroundings. It was unbelievable, you know. Like, I can only imagine that place if it was full of fans, you know. That would have probably been the only thing to have topped that, you know. Obviously, I didn't get on, but, you know, the lads were done an absolutely brilliant job, you know. We held it together and we have a final to look forward to now in Hampden again, and fingers crossed I can get on that day.
Yeah, it's been 17 years, I think, since the club last won the League Cup, so I'd imagine the buzz around the place reaching the final in that dressing room must have been electric afterwards.
Yeah, you know, after every you know, game, we kind of have a little sing and a dance, like if we get a good result. So, you know, it's just, as I said earlier, like the dressing room at the minute, it just couldn't be a better place.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, like a good game yesterday against a very decent side. Conor McCarthy, of course, starting for them. Did you get a chance to speak to him yesterday?
Yeah, I spoke to Conor after the game, just commiserations and that. But no, he's a good lad. He messaged me, you know, at you know, when we get a chance to meet up and get a bite to eat or coffee, we'll do that. But you know, he's been doing brilliant since he got over here to Scotland. So it's great to see other Cork lads doing well. You know, I thought he was probably their best player. Yesterday. So, you know, it's good to see other Cork lads doing well.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, like, seeing him do well, being a success coming from the League of Ireland and making it in Scotland must be, I suppose, kind of an inspiration for you, I guess.
Ah, yeah, you know, if I can follow in that path, just keep ticking away, keep my head down, keep working hard, and, you know, hopefully for me, it's only around the corner. And, you know, I can be a regular in the team and, you know, push myself to, you know, do well. And not only that, just develop myself as a footballer, you know. If I keep my head down and keep working hard, then no doubt I'll be all right.
And I suppose with the League Cup final coming up as well, I mean, like, everyone's going to be exciting. So everyone's excited, everyone's buzzing. So it's going to make training on the snow-covered pitches that much easier for the next couple of weeks.
I know, training's going to be, you know, everyone's fighting for a place now, so, you know, the tempo of training is just so high at the minute. You know, everyone's just trying to do their all to get in the team, especially with such big games coming up. But, yeah, no, I can't complain. Like, you know, I'm just so grateful to be a part of it at the minute.
But afterwards, after you made your debut against Celtic last week, the offer David Martindale comes out and he says that you've got massive potential, which I suppose must be particularly pleasing to hear after making your debut.
It's brilliant as a player to hear, you know, the gaffer speak of like such high quality about you, like, so, you know, just you deep down just want to repay, you know, you want to repay that faith that he's shown in me. So hopefully if I can just keep my head down, keep working hard, and I can repay his faith.
I suppose long term then, Jays, I mean, like, looking, I suppose you don't want to look too far ahead in your career, but obviously playing for Ireland must be part of your thinking. I mean, like, you know, do you think that it's possible for you to, I suppose, progress through the ranks and maybe play for Ireland down the line?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. You know, hopefully that with this move now, it'll help, you know, build towards that landmark in my career. You know, obviously I'm still eligible to play for the Ireland under 21, so even a look in there would be brilliant anytime soon.
Yeah, I suppose you look at the success that Adamita's had playing for Ireland as well, like, you know, a player you know well, again, kind of, I suppose, feel of confidence going to give you that kind of target to aim for, I guess.
To be fair, Adam is, he's a special talent. So, you know, yeah, if I can get to that level anytime soon, then I'd be buzzing.
Excellent. All right, James, come here. Thanks so much for talking to us, buddy. Best of luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll talk to you again before the end of that. But thanks very much, and for not talking to you, best of luck with the League Cup final.
Thanks very much, Roy. Anytime.
Yeah, great chat, James Kabia there about life with Livingston. He certainly hit the ground running. He made his debut last week and scored his first goal for the club. Introduced as a sub about 15 minutes to go in the second half of the clash with Kilmarnock, and scored the opener on the 89th minute from close ranges. They went on to win 2-0. So fantastic to see him doing well, and no doubt he's going to be a massive success there. You can even see that when he's playing for Cove Ramblers, like he had that raw ability, that natural ability, and he carried that on to him with Shelburne as well, and no surprise that he was picked up to go to Scotland, and I'm sure he'll do fantastically well. But that Livingston team doing very, very well, and the League Cup final coming up against St Johnston as well, and it'd be great to see Jays get a run out at Hampden, and hopefully Livingston will go on and win. But yeah, great chat to Jays about his life so far in Scotland and snow covered pitches. It's a bit of a difference than the rainy, windy pitches that he'd be used to in Cork. But yeah, a good chat to Jays. We're going to talk rugby now, and Six Nations, of course, kicking off next week. Ireland in action against Wales next Sunday. We're going to hear from the Ireland coach, Andy Farrell. We're going to hear from the captain, Johnny Sexton, as well, chatting about the upcoming campaign, the impact that Paul O'Connell has had since he's joined as forwards coach, and what Wales bring to the table next Sunday.
Not far at all. I think certainly we made a couple of comments at the end of the autumn, you know, but we know where we're going, and we know how far we are from being there, and we thought we made good strides, and we're nearly where we want to be. But this is it now. The Six Nations is a fantastic competition, and it's there to be won by a number of teams. But to do that, there's a few things that we need to obviously keep getting better at, and I suppose yeah, obviously the question has been over the last while about dealing with the big games, etc. You've got to get through your first game, your second game to assess where you're at before you start talking about the last game, which is where we want to be, obviously, to try and to compete to win a competition. But we're a side that has developed in many ways, but at the same time, it's putting all the pieces together so that it culminates in the performance that we are proud of internally as well.
Yeah, very, very proud to do it again, and I'm looking forward to it. I think I've learned a lot over my first year doing it, and hopefully I'll be better for it going into this campaign. Big aspirations that the team does really well. You know, to try and win a championship as captain would be brilliant. Look, there's lots of stuff. You know, for me, it's about taking it like campaign at a time, you know, and I'm just properly focused on this one. So excited to get into camp. It was a great place to be in November, and now hopefully we can keep it like that, but have a couple of extra results to go our way, you know, and to win some silverware is where we want to be at the end of this tournament.
You're learning every day on the job. There are things that are constantly popping up, obviously, with it being the first time in the job. There's things popping up constantly that you have to be adaptable to, but it's exactly what I wanted, exactly what I wanted, exactly what I thought it was going to be, you know. Yeah, it's dealing with all sorts of different ramifications through a campaign, through a week, through a year, etc., but that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to be able to deal with all that type of stuff and enjoy it along the way, and that's exactly how I feel. Paul is going to add to any environment. Myself and Paul have had a good rugby relationship for many years now, and he's somebody that I keep in touch with on a regular occasion. We've had him in camp a couple of times, and I've always been interested of what his thoughts are and his next steps, etc. And I suppose conversations just keep on happening over a period of time, and the timing's right for now for Paul to come into camp and get ready for the Six Nations.
I obviously know what an impact Paul has on teams by playing under him when he was captain of Ireland, and for 10-15 years with Ireland and Munster, the impact that he had on their environments, and he'll be no different here. He's a brilliant leader, he's a brilliant person, and his desire, his passion for the game is second to none, and that'll rub off on us. I'm really looking forward to working with him. I'm being pushed every day in Leinster with the Byrne brothers, with Kieran Frawley, with, you know, any of the guys that have come into Irish camp, and, you know, like Billy did really well in the stints. He picked up, obviously, a knock in a couple of the games, which was disappointing for him when he was going so well, and Ross, you know, I thought did really well in patches against England, and he would have learned a lot from other patches against a very tough side, probably one of the toughest sides to play against in the world. So they both deserve to be in here, and they've both done very well, and we'll have a good old battle to compete for that spot, and it'll be no different to anyone else.
Like every international coach would tell you, that there's always the here and now and the medium term and the future, and you've got to be able to deal with them all, you know. I suppose selection always comes to first and foremost of do they deserve to be in the group, and with those young lads, etc., that people are talking about, of course they deserve to be in the group, because they'll be in the group to make the group better, you know. Obviously the experience of them being in an international campaign of the ilk of a Six Nations is going to be big for them, so we'll see how they deal with that along the way as well. So every coach adapts to the team that they're playing against and the conditions that they're playing in from week to week. But if I look at one of Wayne's first games, it was under the roof in Principality Stadium there against Italy, and they threw the ball around and had great width and great continuity in their attacking game, and that's something that we've seen with the Scarlets, I suppose. That's Wayne's style, which was great on that occasion. And I suppose as the year's gone on, obviously results and the conditions, etc., show that Wayne's got other ways of playing as well. So I know that we play them first game up. I think the roof will be closed, so we're expecting Wales to play the game that we've seen at the start of the campaign. Tough encounters, like they always are against Scotland. We play them second last up at Murrayfield, and in recent times, really we've had it really tough up there. So it's not going to be any different. From a Scottish point of view, I think they're improving the whole time under Gregor, so they're always a threat. And I suppose it doesn't really matter what's happened in the past, because we know which direction that they're trying to go, as long as in the same direction as ourselves, and that's upwards. They've been tipped as one of the favourites going into this tournament for what they have done in the past year. They've got a tremendous squad full of talent and young rising stars that are coming to the fore as well. They play a good blend of rugby as far as the game understanding is concerned, but they also play to the strengths when the time is right. So they're a very dangerous side to play against, as always, and there's some continuity in their selection, etc., and we expect them to be just as dangerous, if not more dangerous than they have been in the past year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They've got some outstanding young players coming through. They seem to be very much together. Good team spirit, and they're coached very well. Sean Edwards seems to have gone in and made a difference. So, you'd expect big things from them. But hopefully we can learn from the game we played against them at the back end of the Six Nations last year, and give them a better game in Dublin this time.
Well, first and foremost, the obvious answer is my job as a head coach is to make the team to be as good as they possibly can be, you know, to play to our potential. And I suppose where we're sitting at the minute, you guys have commented on it, and rightly so. There's a pecking order at this moment in time where two teams are going in as favourites, and we aspire to be there. I suppose that comes from hard work and performing under pressure. You know, we want to be back up there in that type of light come the end of this tournament.
The Big Red Bench on Cork, ZFM. That's Andy Farrell and Johnny Saxon. They're looking ahead to the Six Nations and that opener against Wales next Sunday evening. Sunday afternoon should be an absolutely cracking game. And good to see the Six Nations going ahead. Fingers crossed they can go ahead safely and it will be completed safely. The French government, of course, giving their support to the health protocols drawn up by the Six Nations organisers during the week as well. So they, France, can travel and play their games. But of course, that can be revised in the event of the public health situation deteriorating in France. But look, good to have the Six Nations look forward to over the next number of weeks, and fingers crossed Ireland can get off to a winning start against Wales next Sunday evening. Alright, that's pretty much it from us on the Big Red Bench this evening. I'd like to thank you all for tuning our way on the show tonight. We'll be back next Saturday and Sunday from 6. Fallon will be back at 6 previewing the Six Nations clash. I'll be here on Sunday reviewing all the action. Fingers crossed, be talking about an Ireland win. You can follow us on Twitter at Big Red Bench, and we're on Instagram as well, and you can follow our Facebook page too. Green and Red's up next from 7 to 10, 3 hours of the best Irish music coming your way right here on Cork's Red FM. But that's it from us. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening, folks, and we will talk to you next Saturday and Sunday from 6.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.